Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Well, we promised you a great big Friday show, and I got to say, we're delivering. Nice job, Darren. With this hour, we do the church in the news, and there is a lot of church in the news right now. Just thinking about all the things we can cover, whether it's Pope Francis and a whole variety of things, the Papal Foundation story, what's going on in China, church issues and stories all around the world. If you would like to discuss the church in the news, if there's a particular story you'd like to get some help understanding, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I am your host, Cy Kellett, and our guest is Dr. Matthew Bunsen. Dr. Bunsen is the a senior contributor at EWTN. He's the senior editor at the National Catholic Register and faculty chair at the Catholic Distance University, a very busy, apparently. Dr. Matthew Bunsen joins us now. Thank you, Doctor, for being with us.
Oh, great to be with you again.
I always have mixed feelings about you coming on because the reason is my voice. I feel like my voice doesn't sound good next to your voice. Does anybody's voice sound good next to your voice?
I will take that as a compliment. Yeah, I can think of many people whose voices were made for radio.
But Nick, that's an amazing radio voice. Is it not? Yes, Nick's saying yes.
Thank you.
But that's the extent of my mixed feelings. Otherwise, I'm very, very glad you're here because there's a lot to untangle in the world today. And I thought I would start out by asking you about China because it's the one that people have been kind of asking around here the most. People want to know, is the Pope, everything from, was the Pope just rolling over for the Chinese government to, has this ever happened in the church before and all that kind of thing? Could you just tell us what happened with the Chinese bishops, the Pope's action there and what it all means?
Yeah, well, in a nutshell, what we're seeing is the Vatican's effort to establish some sort of formal diplomatic relations with the People's Republic of China. Mm-hmm. Now, it's extremely complicated because for about the last 50 or 60 years, you've had the persecution of the church, but you've also had the existence of what to outsiders certainly seem to be two very different Catholic organizations in China, because the People's Republic, the communist government there, established back in the 1950s what was called the Patriotic Catholic Association, similar to organizations that they created for the Protestants. Essentially, these are state-run churches. And the problem becomes with that, that there's a question of those who are heads of this, are they in communion with Rome? Are their ordinations valid? Are they valid but illicit? And then you have the underground church in China. So trying to remedy this situation, I think Pope Francis is reaching out to China, in particular through the Secretary of State and his very reliable diplomatic chief negotiator, and that's Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican Secretary of State. We're trying to reach an accord with Beijing over a couple of things. First, what is the exact status of the Catholic Church in China? And the other is, will this lead to a widening of religious rights, not just for Christians, not just for Catholics, but for people of all stripes in China? So just that little nutshell gives you an idea of how complicated this is.
Indeed. Is there any hope at the end of this that there will be the free exercise of the Catholic faith, for example, in China, or is that just too much to hope for?
Yeah, what we see at the moment is something that is a kind of a hodgepodge, to use that word, in the way that the Chinese government is treating the church. I say that because we're seeing across different provinces of China the obliteration of churches, the bulldozing of churches, the stripping away of crosses and crucifixes from buildings and the roofs of buildings in one province. In the other provinces, you'll have areas where the church is relatively left unmolested.
Yeah.
The voice, in so many ways, of the great concern of Chinese Catholics and of Catholics around the world has been Cardinal Joseph Zen, the retired bishop of Hong Kong, who has expressed for many months concerns about how negotiations are going with China. And he's raised the specter of the Chinese government essentially bamboozling the Vatican.
Uh-huh.
And I say that because his concern is that at the end of the day, this will be a deal that is not good for the church, but is very good for the People's Republic of China. The Vatican has pushed back pretty strongly against Cardinal Zen's comments, reiterating the need, as Cardinal Parolin did just a couple of weeks ago in an interview with the Italian newspapers, that what we're seeing is an effort to create, first of all, unity among Catholics in China. In other words, he's trying to find mm-hmm. a way to end this seeming division mm-hmm. of the Patriotic Church and the Underground Church. So they take pastoral care very seriously as their first priority, and then establish sort of diplomatic relations. But there are a host of questions that you've already asked one. At the end of the day, is this going to be bad for the church? Then there's the added complication of what would diplomatic relations do to Holy See relations with Taiwan?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people haven't even thought about.
Right.
But the implications could be grave mm-hmm. because the Catholic Church in Taiwan is small but growing.
Oh, man. When you think about that, you think this is a good time not to be the Pope. I'm really glad I don't have that job because, I mean, really, you're not faced with a lot of great, clear options. Like, this is the path to go. You're really kind of just got to negotiate as best you can there.
Now, if we want some historical continuity or context for some of these discussions, we can go back to the Concordat that was signed between Pope Pius XI and Adolf Hitler in Nazi Germany back in the 1930s. That was negotiated by Eugenio Pacelli.
Yeah.
And a Cardinal Gasparri, who at the time was the Secretary of State. So two very reliable diplomats, certainly Pacelli, who went on to become, of course, Venerable Pope Pius XII. I mentioned that the Concordat because one of the things that it did accomplish, despite its many critics at the time, was a document that Pius XI and Pius XII could hold up and place in front of Hitler and say, this is what you agreed to. And yeah. we're going to hold you to the letter of this.
Yeah.
So if a similar Concordat can be crafted with the People's Republic of China,
yeah.
certainly something that certainly the Vatican hopes could lead to normalization of relations. But as you stressed, that the question is going to be, will this improve the civil and religious rights of people in China at the very time that a new set of fairly draconian religious oversight laws came into effect just on February 1st.
Oh, man. You know, yeah. it occurs to me that, especially for maybe some of our younger listeners, they may not understand what is the problem with China. But Chinese communism is atheistic, and it's still officially atheistic. You can't be a member of the Communist Party, which is the only way to hold any power there, unless you are publicly an atheist.
That's right. With the communist takeover of China in 1949 under Mao Zedong, they instituted one of the most cruel regimes of religious oppression that we've seen, matched in many ways only by the institution of the similar oppression in the Soviet Union when it was created in the 1920s, of course, under Lenin and then Joseph Stalin, where priests and nuns and bishops and laypeople were massacred wholesale. It was a similar form of persecution in China. Today, there are only five recognized religions or faiths in China. It's Buddhism, Taoism, Islam, Catholicism, and Protestantism. All of them, however, are required to submit in one way or another to the People's Republic of China, the communist government. And that is a series of layers of control that extend from Beijing
mm-hmm.
all the way down to the smallest villages of China, where communism has found its way, it's wormed its way into almost every facet of life. And it's very difficult, I think, for a lot of us to appreciate the tensions and problems that average, ordinary Catholics live under, and anyone of belief live under in that kind of a regime.
888-318-7884 is our number. Our topic is the church in the news, and we got just the guy to talk about it with us, a senior editor at National Catholic Register, senior contributor at EWTN. If you have a question about the church in the news, 888-318-7884 is that number. Again, maybe you have a question about Pope Francis. Maybe you have a question about ongoing discussions about Amoris Laetitia or Cardinal Sarah's work on the Eucharist. Anything having to do with the church, we welcome that question. That's Dr. Bunsen's wheelhouse. That's what he does all day long, is make sure that he and we are abreast of the church in the news. 888-318-7884, the number. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers. Our success depends on you.
Hi, this is Tim Staples, and I'm challenging you to take the 20 Answers Challenge. Here's how the challenge works. When you purchase the sampler of all 26 books in the 20 Answers series, we're going to knock 60% off the price, and we're challenging you to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. And this year, to make it easier, we're offering free shipping on the sampler if you live in the continental United States. That's 60% off free shipping and over 500 answers to questions you have about the Catholic faith. Join us this Lent and Easter to take the 20 Answers Challenge, and together we can be part of something great. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. This Lent, plant seeds of faith in the hearts and minds of your non-Catholic friends and family. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today. You can order your copies of Why We're Catholic by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. It's Friday on Catholic Answers Live, and that means we always have, Darren gets us fine guests on Friday. And again, we have another fine guest this Friday, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, a senior contributor at EWTN and the senior editor of the National Catholic Register, which is just, I mean, year after year, that paper continues to be really the indispensable Catholic paper.
It is a privilege, and I mean that in all seriousness, to work for the National Catholic Register and to work with the team from Editor-in-Chief Jeanette DeMello and Executive Director Dan Burke all the way down. Of course, our publisher is Michael Warsaw, who is also CEO of EWTN. And the National Catholic Register, not to toot our horn in any way, but we are one of the rarest of creatures in media in general and Catholic media in particular. That we have actually increased our subscriptions and our readership over the last years. As I said, it's unheard of today.
Right. I'm not surprised. I have to say I'm not surprised. It's a very fine paper, but congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you.
Lots of folks around the world joining us on Facebook for this conversation, and I want to go to Regilia or Regilia. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. Not so good with my Portuguese, but she writes from Brazil. How can one be a real Christian in countries where corruption crucifies the poorest? And that sounds familiar from Brazil. Any thoughts on that, Dr. Bunsen?
Yeah. Well, the first, of course, is by living the faith ourselves, by being holier ourselves, by working to promote the sacraments, to live the sacraments, to also help build our own Catholic community where we are. And then to be willing to work with the leaders of the church in different countries like Brazil to promote the dignity of the human person and the pursuit of the common good. Now, those sound like very high-minded ideals, but actually Catholic social teaching is a very powerful instrument for us to be prophetic witnesses in culture. And corruption, as Pope Francis has written extensively in a number of his books, encyclicals, I think especially of Laudato Si, which has been sort of branded the global warming encyclical, but actually it touches on so many of the problems that we have in the world today.
Right.
Corruption is something that he has touched upon very clearly. He connects it to the throwaway culture. He connects it as well to the withering away of the dignity of the human person. So it really has to start with speaking out against corruption in our own community, but then also helping to participate to the best that we can in political life.
Yep.
That's something that the church has certainly encouraged, and I would ask everyone to read, in fact, I think the 2002 document from then Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, prefect at the time of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, on activities of Catholics in political life, in which it really is something of a necessity for us to participate, to bring the teachings of the church, the wisdom of the church. It's not interfering in political life. It's actually informing political life.
Chino in the Philippines kind of seconds Regilia's point, but he says the new government in the Philippines is diametrically opposed to Christian teaching. Is that your sense as well?
In many areas, I think it's clear that President Duterte is willing to go directly in opposition to the church. He's in favor, I believe, of a lot of things such as contraception. He has also waged what church leaders in the Philippines would view an absolutely merciless campaign against the drug trade.
Yeah.
I think the last research that I did into this, I think about 30,000 people have been killed.
Oh, my Lord. I had no idea.
In this fight against the drug trade. I believe that's the number. I could be mistaken. But it gives you an idea of the dimensions of the problems that the Philippines are facing. Not to mention, we have in places like, I think, Marawi in the Philippines, Islamic insurgents. We know that ISIS, Islamic fundamentalists, the jihadists are going to the Philippines. They're being funded from radical Islamic groups around the world. And that's another component that President Duterte is facing. And how he deals with those, I think, will tell us a lot about the tenor of his presidency. Church leaders there, however, continue to promote the culture of life as best they can, and they're trying to have their voices heard in what is, I know, a difficult period for the Philippines. So our prayers definitely go to the Philippine people.
All right. Chino, thank you for that. And Regilia, thank you as well. Since we've just visited Brazil there, I do want to let's stay in South America for a minute, because I'm thinking about Venezuela. I think everybody is. I mean, it seems horrifying what's happening there. I know the church has been very opposed to the Maduro government and then the government that was just prior to the Maduro government.
Under Chavez.
Chavez, yes, who I believe died of cancer. Is that right?
Yes.
And so give us some sense of what's happening with the church in Venezuela and what's happening with the Venezuelan people.
Well, every day we read accounts. You can follow the AP news stories. They've been doing a pretty good job of covering what's happening there. The economic situation, the political situation continue to deteriorate. We're hearing now reports of women, unfortunately, having to sell themselves in order to find any money. The currency itself is now so thoroughly debased. There are, not to be overly gruesome, there are reports of cannibalism. You were seeing the total collapse of a failed socialist state. You were asking earlier about the People's Republic of China, that a lot of our younger listeners may not even be familiar with the idea of what a communist state looks like. Well, China is a communist state. Venezuela was crafted by Chavez, and now Maduro is a kind of socialist utopia. Socialist policies of direct state interference, the seizure of industries and other things by the state. And this isn't a Republican or Democrat kind of a statement. The simple reality is that a socialist state has yet to prove to be effective in working, certainly in places like Latin America. So the Maduro regime, and we can call it a regime at this point because it is clearly functioning outside of the democratic process with rigged elections and a Supreme Court in Venezuela that is directly contrary to the will of the Venezuelan people. All of these things have created a tinderbox of a situation. And church leaders, I think, have demonstrated remarkable restraint in not calling for the direct ouster of Maduro, but trying to find a democratic way of bringing an end to what is, I think everyone would agree, a national nightmare there.
Yeah.
They have issued some really strong statements about violence and the persecution of Maduro's political enemies. Unfortunately, many of the bishops there are considered part of some of Maduro's political enemies.
Yeah.
We've had attacks, for example, on the Apostolic Nunciature in Venezuela over the years. We've had direct attacks on priests and elsewhere.
888-318-7884. We're discussing the church in the news with the man who knows. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is senior contributor at EWTN and senior editor of the National Catholic Register. We go now to Jim in Austin, Texas, listening to EWTN on Sirius Satellite Radio. Jim, your question for Dr. Bunsen.
It's not a question, it's a comment.
Okay.
This is the key thing. I live in a complex with mostly Chinese grad students. On Monday, a woman came to visit me to say goodbye. She's going back with her 10-year-old on Saturday, electrical engineer. And she said to me, we spent a couple hours together, she said, the Christians in Austin made her life completely different. She didn't know Christ before she came here. And she said the nicest people to her were all Christians. And I mentioned, I said, really? She said, well, do you know Jesus? I said, I'm Catholic. Of course I know Jesus, but I didn't say that. I said, yes, I do. And I have a passionist profession cross, which I went and got. She was stunned by it. She took a picture of it to take back to China. And I had a rosary made with the Millennium Crucifix is its crucifix from the Vatican a few years ago. She took a picture of that, and she was talking about the whole thing of how Christians were to her. My son is a grad student here. When he first encountered the religious groups, he encountered the Chinese religious group. He says, unbelievable people and how they follow Jesus, non-denominationally speaking, but Jesus is their hero. Thirdly, in 10, he got to know six girls, collegiate, SeaWorld, experimenting using English. He got to know them and help them. Took one of them to the missions in San Antonio, south of San Antonio.
Oh, yeah.
One of the girls, when, in walking out, she said, the silence is amazing. And she asked for a Bible to take back to China with her. That was 2010. The reason I was, and I just was coming out of Costco and turned it on, I said, I have to call in and share this with you because I heard what the man was saying, that we need, with all the tragedy going on, we need hope also. And ironically, that a lot of Chinese students come to the University of Texas in Austin because it's well known and the Chinese government pays for them to be here. They pay $1,800 a month or something like that.
Jim, I'm going to let Dr. Bunsen respond. It's a wonderful point that you're making. Actually, that's kind of delightful to think of the Chinese government sending people to Texas. And you know you're going to hear about Jesus in Texas if you stay long enough. Your response, Dr. Bunsen.
Yeah, well, I think our caller has hit on something that's important. And that is that if estimates are correct, and by all of the data we can look at, I believe they are, China could well be on its way to becoming, numerically anyway, the largest Christian population in the world by 2050.
Praise God. Thank God for that.
We know because the number of conversions continues to grow. The churches continue to fill. And this is precisely what we have seen in Eastern Europe in the aftermath of the Soviet Union. People were wondering what was going to happen when the Soviet Union collapsed. Well, what we've seen in Eastern Europe is a great battleground between materialist civilization, certainly from the West.
That's us.
And that's us, and
okay.
Secularism.
Yeah.
But also the resurgence of Christianity in whole parts of Eastern Europe. We are seeing that there is this innate longing for God, certainly among the Chinese people. Bibles are selling, and despite the efforts of the Chinese government to suppress them. Now, the reason that we have seen in recent years this severe uptick in the persecution of the church and believers in China is that unquestionably Beijing is worried. They accomplished something of a miracle back in the 1990s and 2000s that the Soviet Union could not. On the one hand, the Soviet Union, with its perestroika and glasnost, tried to do two things, to widen and improve the economy, but also they loosened the strings on civil rights. The result, of course, is that after the fall of the Soviet Union, while democracy is still nascent and very fragile in Russia, we're seeing this yearning for God more and more in Eastern Europe. But China was able to keep the clamps on religious and social freedoms while at the same time bringing in economic liberalization. How long they're going to be able to continue to do that is one of the great questions of our time. And I think the church has been trying to position resources and to find a way of moving forward with diplomatic relations in order to accomplish the freedom that Catholics deserve.
I believe the Holy Spirit will probably have a say in all of this, too. We can have faith in that. I got to tell you, we got some questions about Pope Francis people want to get to when we come back. So we do have to take a break. Our guest is Dr. Matthew Bunsen. We're talking about the church in the news. We'll get to those St. Francis questions when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As the legend goes, the Protestant Reformation began when Martin Luther nailed a list of his grievances with the Catholic Church to the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany. But do you know the whole story? In Catholic Answer's brand new documentary, The Protestant Revolution, you will hear from top apologists Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Carla Broussard, Trent Horn, and Steve Weidenkopf as they expose the errors of Martin Luther and of the other so-called reformers. This DVD will give you a clearer understanding of our Protestant brothers and sisters, and you will be better equipped to engage them about what separates us and about what unites us. Order your copy of The Protestant Revolution today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting shop.catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
I have wanted to thank you so very much. Thank God. Thank God you guys are here for us. Believe it. I just can't believe all that you've done and how you've stuck with it. Many times when I think I can't do something, I think about some of the things that you've talked about.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, the senior editor of the National Catholic Register and senior contributor at EWTN, about the church in the news. And the church is in the news all over the place. I'm going to read a question to you from Facebook. I will get to the callers on the line. If you're on the line, don't worry. I'm going to get there. But I know that many people have this question, so I'm going to give it to you. Why? They may not all phrase it the same way. But I know that this question is there because other people are asking it as well. Why is Pope Francis unwilling to clarify the encyclical, and he's referring to Amoris Laetitia, that has created so much confusion and division after the cardinals asked him to do so? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I think there are a couple of ways that we can look at this. First, Pope Francis has chosen not to comment any further on the encyclical. I mean, I should say the apostolic exhortation, because that's what it was. Remember, we have to remember that it's an exhortation, not an encyclical, which has different theological weight within the church. He has made it clear that he's not going to comment on it because, as he has said, he wants the document, as he put it, to speak for itself. Now, he seems comfortable, and in fact, we just put to bed, it'll be coming out shortly, the latest issue of the National Catholic Register, and that is marking the five-year anniversary of Pope Francis's pontificate.
Oh, wow.
And one of the, which we're almost at, on March 13th,
so wow,
boy,
yeah,
how time flies. That is worth noting because in there we have a number of articles that really touch on this very question. So I'd say leave it to someone like Father Raymond D'Souza and Edward Penton to reflect on the Pope's style. I will say, though, and this is something that we touch upon in our editorial for this issue, that Francis seems willing to live with these tensions. We saw the way that the tensions were formed in the 2014 and 2015 Synod of Bishops that actually began grappling with the very question that he addressed in Amoris Laetitia. And he seems willing to live with the tension right now of seemingly very different interpretations of Amoris Laetitia depending upon the episcopal conferences. So we've seen the episcopal conferences in Germany and Malta, for example, having one way of looking at in the obviously very controversial Chapter 8 and the question of things like communion for the divorced and remarried from the Polish bishops and a number of individual bishops as well. So these are questions, I think, that Francis is willing to leave to the bishops. And this sort of ties into the other questions of decentralization in the church as he sees it. And this is how he chooses to govern.
That was Leo, by the way, that asked that on Facebook. I didn't give his name before. Okay, thank you. And if anyone has a follow-up question, you can post it on Facebook or give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. We are talking the church in the news. We go now to Joseph in New Orleans. Joseph, you are on with Dr. Matthew Bunsen.
Hello, Dr. Bunsen. I have a comment. I'm very pleased with the American Catholic community's involvement with life issues. It seems to me that we should do a lot more about justice and peace issues. And I will try to give maybe three examples very quickly. One is that we destabilized Iraq, and the rise of ISIS in Iraq is unfortunately a direct consequence of our unjust aggression against Iraq in 2003. Another example very quickly would be that the UN the UN is on the verge of 123 countries agreed to come up with a legally binding solution for outlawing nukes. And it has not been reported, but North Korea is willing to get rid of its nukes if everybody else is willing to do that. You know, this was resolution number L41. Nobody reported in the Catholic media. They reported it in the secular media.
All right.
And third, very quick.
Yep, go ahead. Sorry. Go to the third. Yep. Thank you, Joseph.
Yeah, and the third very quick example would be, you know, what's happening in Ukraine. Unfortunately, it was a coup d'etat from the very beginning. Some of the most serious elements of the Ukrainian society were recruited to overthrow the government. Now, the latest news, nobody is reporting again, you know, this new government is outlawing schools in the languages of the minorities, such as Polish, Russian, Hungarian, Romanian languages. And,
Joseph, can I just interject? So these are three foreign policy kind of things about the United States. So when you're talking about being the Catholic Church, maybe, as you said, doing a good job on life issues, but not so much on justice issues, you're talking about the way that from your view, you'd like the Catholic Church to be more critical of the American government's foreign policy. Am I in the right ballpark there, Joseph?
Yeah, with the Iraq aggression, and also, you know, our failure to,
Okay, all right.
Our failure to follow up, for example, with the outlawing of mutes.
Okay, fair enough. Let's let Dr. Bunsen respond to that.
Well, the first way to approach the question is that there really is, we have to be very careful about the being caught up in the idea of justice issues versus life issues. From the church's standpoint, we stand on the sanctity of human life, on the dignity of the human person, on the pursuit of the common good, all of these different pillars of Catholic social teaching. It begins with the dignity of the human person, made in the image and likeness of God, and therefore worthy of respect and dignity and protection. And there are many people who would say that the most pressing social justice, to use that term, issue of our time is abortion. That we are looking since the implementation of Roe versus Wade back in 1973 at the loss of 70 million children. So this, I think, has to be viewed as a civil rights issue as well as a social justice issue. Now, to your specific point, taking our cue from Catholic social teaching, if you look at the work of the Holy See and you look at the work, for example, of the USCCB and bishops' conferences around the world, several priorities have been made in the area of Catholic social teaching as they relate to political life and also policy. Now, we have to first clarify that issues of things like immigration and nuclear proliferation, those, in the end, are prudential judgments where we can argue over the efficacy and effectiveness of different policies, but we look at them through that lens, again, of Catholic social teaching and the dignity of the human person and what are intrinsic evils. But in the end, policies are prudential. Now, having said that, the Holy See is actually one of the most active voices in the world today in resisting nuclear proliferation. It has taken part in almost every major nuclear anti-proliferation treaty that I can think of. The Pope himself has spoken and written about this in a number of his writings, as did Pope Benedict XVI, as did Pope John Paul II, and the popes of the modern age before him. You can go all the way back to Pacem in Terris by Pope St. John the 23rd, who spoke out against the danger of nuclear weapons. So we tie very closely the principles of proliferation, of non-proliferation, the end of nuclear threat, to the common good, the pursuit of what is best for us as a now global civilization. So I would encourage you to take a look online at the writings of the different popes and of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, because they have been leading the charge for a long time about U.S. policy with regard to wars overseas and the nuclear threat we all face.
Joseph, thank you very, very much for that call from New Orleans. Let's try to get another call in before we have to go to a break. Let's go to Dorothy in St. Charles, Missouri, listening on the Covenant Network. Dorothy, you are on with Dr. Matthew Bunsen. Your question, please.
Hello. Good evening to both of you.
Good evening.
I just wanted to know, this question came to mind. I was thinking, what are your thoughts on what's going on today as far as, like, cyber attacks against the USA by different countries? And I don't know what your thoughts would be, you know, on that as far as if there's any on Rome, if the church speaks out on this type of warfare. Because all I can imagine is Abba Father up in those heavens looking down at these skies and seeing all this kind of warfare going on in the skies. And has Pope Francis ever spoke out on the danger of this type of warfare? Or, you know, as far as the United States of America being attacked by other countries because of the fact that we are a Christian nation?
Dorothy, let's let I think that's I wouldn't have thought of that question, but that's a fascinating question. I'd like to know the answer. What has the church said about these kind of cyber attacks?
Yeah, well, the Pope himself actually takes cybersecurity very seriously, and I say this because he has a huge Twitter account, and the Vatican website itself has been attacked on a number of occasions. And one of the things that can drive it home is just recently, in fact, the Vatican news site was actually hacked briefly by a hacker who is trying to make the point that the Vatican sites are yet not as secure as they should be. The Pope Francis has spoken out against warfare in all forms. And the Holy See, especially in the last years, through the work of what was once the Pontifical Council for Social Communications and now falls under what's called the Secretariat for Communications, recognizes the significance of cybersecurity, but also the wider issues that relate to Internet security. That includes everything from cyberbullying to sexting to illicit use of the Internet, the use of the Internet for pornography. All of the things that contribute to the decay of the social order. So the Vatican, like other states, is also involved with issues like cybersecurity. It falls under the wider field of international security now. Everything is interconnected. So it just isn't the cyber attacks on the U.S. It's also the viruses that are spread that can impact global financial security and other things. So first, from the church standpoint, for pursuit of the common good, there's concern, but also just from the practical reality of cybersecurity for a nation, the Vatican is also concerned.
Dorothy, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks very much for that fascinating question. We are talking about the church in the news. 888-31-TRUTH is our number, 888-31-TRUTH. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is our guest. I've got some questions for you, and I'll try to make sure I let callers in as well. But I do want to know a little bit about what's going on with the sex abuse crisis. I think we need a little update on that. Haven't spoken about that for a little while. So we'll do that when we come back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin, and I'm here to tell you about the 20 Answers Challenge. Here's how it works. When you purchase the sampler of all 26 books in the 20 Answers series, we're going to knock 60% off the price. Then you can challenge yourself to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. And this year, to make it easier, we're offering free shipping on the sampler if you live in the continental United States. That's 60% off, free shipping, and over 500 answers to questions you've had about the Catholic faith. Join us this Lent and Easter to take the 20 Answers Challenge, and together we can be part of something great. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
We struggle with sin. We're distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. Thankfully, the Church has given us Lent, the perfect time for reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. The saints of the Counter-Reformation faced greater obstacles than these, yet they found the grace to persevere during a tumultuous period in the Church. How can we do the same? Reform Yourself is a great place to start. We all need to reform our souls. This Lent, let the saints who reformed the Church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Great Big Friday Show. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is our guest. We're talking the church in the news. If you have questions about the church in the news, you'd like to know, maybe get a little insider scoop from Dr. Bunsen on what do these stories mean that we hear about? Sometimes they're at the periphery of our attention. You know, one thing I was thinking about at the break, Dr. Bunsen, is Pope Benedict, and you hear different things. Is there any news about how he's doing, about how he's getting along now? Anything on Pope Benedict?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if you've discussed this at all on air, but just a couple of weeks ago, he sent a brief note to an Italian newspaper, I think it was Corriere della Sera, in response to a question from some of its editors to him that a lot of readers were sending in. They wanted to know how he was doing. Oh. And he thanked all of them for their prayers and their support. And then he used the couple of phrases that drew all of our attention, and certainly in the Catholic press, and that was that in his final phase, as he put it, as he prepares to go home. Now, from what we're hearing, he's continuing to decline, but very slowly. And then we had a news report, I think just last week or so, that he was supposedly suffering from some sort of a neurological disorder that was hastening his passing. Now, let's remember, he's 91. That was debunked. That was refuted by the Vatican. And I think if we go back to some of the original German reporting, how they understand the use of the phrase nerves and nervous disorder, it's loose in its interpretation. So I think one of the ways you could look at it is that as he's getting older, his nervous system is not as effective as it used to be. So the best thing that I can say is that, yes, Pope Benedict has entered his last years, but we knew that.
Yeah.
And let's just continue to pray for him and continue to derive great comfort, as I've been saying now for about 5 years, that we have this Pope Emeritus, this kind of spiritual juggernaut hidden away in the Vatican gardens.
Yeah.
Praying for us every day. I derive immense comfort from just his presence here. And let's just keep praying for him.
Yeah, I have to say, we got that book recently, too, from Peter Sewald, the interview with him, the final, you're going to have to help me, the Last Testament.
Yeah.
And it was just so wonderful. He's so candid. He is who he is, you know, and he answers the question. And sometimes you see Peter Sewald ask a question and you think, he's not going to answer that. And he does. And I find that delightful about him. And I would highly recommend that book to anyone. It's just a wonderful reflection on his life.
Well, as we look to what is his last period, however long it is, and as the old motto used to say, pray for the Pope gloriously reigning. Well, we say about Pope Benedict, pray for the Pope Emeritus who gloriously reigned.
Yeah, right.
But let's keep praying for him. But also, this is a great opportunity for all of us, much as with the canonization and impending canonization of Pope Paul VI, to start doing for ourselves these kind of reappraisals of their writings. Go back, if you've never read it, read Joseph Ratzinger's Introduction to Christianity, which is one of those great books of the 20th century for introducing anyone to the faith.
I've always thought introduction was a little bit of the wrong word there, though. Like you kind of got to know some stuff to like that. It's a significant book.
It is. Yeah. But remember, it was basically intended for first-year theology students. But the Summa Theologiae by St. Thomas Aquinas was intended to be an introductory text.
I know. People were smarter back then, I think.
Well, I was going to say that, people clearly were using much more of their brains than they do now.
Yeah, that's right. Let me ask you. I said I wanted to ask you about the sex abuse crisis.
Yeah.
Since 2002, we've been going through what George Weigel has called the Long Lent. I think in many ways that Lent is not – it's certainly not in the state it was maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. But then you hear things like what's going on in Chile, and the Pope makes a comment about a Chilean bishop, and all of a sudden it's big news again. Maybe you could put that all in context for us, help us understand it.
Yeah, there are several threads of the story relating to the sex abuse crisis that have been in the news of late. The first is that, as we all are aware, Pope Francis, in his recent visit just this month to Chile and Peru, answered to what one would charitably describe as indelicately or imprudently a question relating to a bishop who's been under some intense scrutiny for a while, and that's Bishop Barros, and what he did or did not do as a bishop relating to the sex abuse crisis. Now, Chile has been beset with the crises and cases of sex abuse, so it was a terrible setting for a misstep like that to take place. But it also damages, I think, some of the Holy Father's credibility in an area that had been, up to that point, an area of great success for him. And I mean that because this is somebody who picked up the reins from Pope Benedict XVI. We just talked about him in the area of fighting clergy sexual abuse around the world. And Francis's track record throughout this pontificate had been pretty solid. Now, he established this commission for the protection of minors within the Vatican, headed by Cardinal Sean O'Malley of Boston, right, who himself has a sparkling record in dealing with the sex abuse crisis. The commission itself has fallen under some controversy as well, because a couple of its members, including Marie Collins, sex abuse survivors, resigned because they felt that there was too much resistance within the Vatican bureaucracy, something that, that Francis has been trying to reform. So we had a misstatement, a misstep by the Holy Father that earned him a very public rebuke from Cardinal O'Malley, and he accepted it to his credit. He admitted that he'd been wrong. And very quickly, the Vatican reconstituted, did not establish, but actually reconstituted this commission with a more global perspective, but also a number of victims of sexual abuse. So it's a perspective, I think, that is absolutely vital for any commission that's going to be looking at clergy sexual abuse around the planet to have. And we'll have to see going forward if Cardinal O'Malley's advice is heeded and if, in fact, this commission can get back to work, crafting what I think are especially needed norms and procedures for bishops all over the world. Now, that's been slowed down and complicated a bit in itself because you have so many different jurisdictions and so many laws and so many different cultures.
Yeah, that's a patchwork, isn't it? I mean, you have to be respectful of local laws, but you want to have some universal church standards.
Exactly, but you have as well the technicality that there are different places around the world that could actually use these norms to persecute the church.
I hadn't thought about that. I want to get to another call, at least one before we have to go. David in Dayton, Ohio, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. You are on with Dr. Matthew Bunsen. Your question, please.
Hi, Dr. Bunsen. You had talked about the fact that the Holy Father likes to, he has a desire to let things be in tension, and he also has a management style that's more decentralized.
Yeah.
From a lay standpoint, I look at that and I think, well, it's not tension, it's confusion. And from the decentralization standpoint, I think, where's our Catholic identity? Why don't we all just become Protestants and be done with it?
Yeah, there is no question that for a lot of Catholics, there's been a great deal of head scratching over the last 5 years and a certain amount of frustration. I have spent actually time, including on Catholic Answers over the last 5 years, trying to place some context to what Pope Francis has been doing and writing. So many of the things that he says are often taken out of context. Amoris Laetitia, for example, we have considerable disagreement among the bishops. I respect someone like Cardinal Gerhard Mueller, the former prefect for the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith, who makes it clear in his opinion, and it's a considerable one, that Amoris Laetitia does not mark a break with the teachings of the Church, continuity of the teachings of the Church, especially with regard to matters of sexuality, but especially matters of marriage and communion for the divorced and civilly remarried. But there are those who would argue, in fact, that it does. For some clarity on this, I would really suggest go to ncregister.com because we have a number of posts from people like Father Raymond D'Souza who provide some great insights into what Francis may be thinking here. I would encourage you to go back and read Amoris Laetitia itself and see what you think, especially Chapter 8, and see what you think about it. That's important if, as Catholics, we're going to be informed about what we're talking about. Now, I agree that Pope Francis could benefit, and all of us could benefit, from a tad more clarity in some of the things that he says. But it is, in large part, I think, part of his personality, as we saw in these in-flight press conferences, to be very extemporaneous, to speak off the cuff and in many ways from the heart. And in an era of social media, where tweets and Instagram and Snapchat and Facebook posts can fly around the world very quickly. It can be a bear for all of us to try to cover.
David, how does that sit with you?
It provides some clarity. I think I probably need to try to get a more maybe forgiving heart.
Well, that's probably true of all of us. As a matter of fact, that's probably a perfect note to end on a Friday. Thank you for saying that, David. Yes, right. We all need a more forgiving heart. Appreciate the call, David. Thank you
yes,
very much.
Very much.
Dr. Matthew Bunsen, thank you so much for just a fast hour. That really went by quickly. I appreciate it.
Well, you make it a lot of fun, and thanks to all of your listeners with some really great questions tonight.
You can find Dr. Bunsen's work at the National Catholic Register and on EWTN, and you are also, tell me, at the Catholic Distance University, you are the
faculty chair. You can find us at cdu.edu.
All right. That wraps up the week for us. We'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live. Hey, first of all, I got to say you guys did a great job. Brandon, the new video guy, big hand for Brandon. Thanks, Nick, for the sound. And thanks, Darren, for covering the phones for us today. Jesus Christ is the light of the nations. And we'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.